We're here to make a dent in the universe, or else why are we even doing this?
If I don't think I cut out all the fun stuff, because that to me is the fun stuff.
Build that audience, because if you've got no one to sell it to, then it's just going to flop and die, and no one likes a floppy, right?
I'm yet to meet a woman who just kind of grew up confidently in her body.
Welcome to my podcast. I'm Nicole Brumner. Join my weekly conversations with really interesting people as I delve into the stories and experiences that make them uniquely them. Hello and welcome back to another podcast from the Nicole Brumner podcast. I'm still trying to come up with a better name, so if you do have any ideas, do let me know. They're very welcome. And this podcast really wouldn't be possible without the guest of today. And that is because it was through the Freedom Geek that I was introduced to Kim, my marketing associate, and she now runs this podcast for me. And without her, I could not have done it. So I do owe Imogen a huge thank you. Imogen's an outsourcing expert and coach, and she's currently making her mark as the founder of The Freedom Geek, a dynamic company leveraging talented individuals, virtual assistants in the Philippines, to assist overwhelmed entrepreneurs with delegation, working smart, and accelerating their businesses. And I do know what it's like to be an overwhelmed entrepreneur. Imogen has inspired and helped hundreds of up-and-coming business owners, including coaches, influencers, podcasters, that's me, PR and fashion people, real estate investors, online sellers, and many more. The challenge of finding reliable, motivated individuals to trust with essential business tasks at an affordable price is one that impacts entrepreneurs worldwide. And Imogen equips them with the skills and strategies they need to delegate, free themselves, and grow their businesses. She's always challenging herself to delegate, automate, and systemize more and more to become the ultimate queen of delegation. Imogen continues to share her knowledge with her community as she creates, tests, and proves bulletproof systems so entrepreneurs can work smart and replace themselves. And she's done that incredibly well, but I won't go into it anymore. We will welcome Imogen to tell us about it herself.
Thanks, Nicole. Thank you for that intro. I am in Mexico City right now, so hiding from the state of the world and enjoying the sunshine.
Yeah, and it must be warm over there, is it?
It's lovely. It's beautiful. So, yes, I'm very grateful.
Yeah, exactly. And you must be really grateful that you've been able to set up a business that allows you to have this flexibility and work from somewhere like Mexico City. How did this whole journey and this whole idea come about, though?
You know, I'd love to say that I was really strategic with this and that I knew that I would be doing this on day one, but it was not like that at all. Actually, funnily enough, the main reason that the Freedom Geek is completely remote is because when I started it, I was already working a full-time corporate job and I was running a property investment business. And when people said, you know, I want to talk to you about VAs, can we meet? It was like, I'm so busy. I'm already working mornings and lunchtimes and evenings and weekends. So I was like, I can only really do things over the phone unless you literally turn up on my doorstep. If you want to come to work and meet me in my lunch break, I can do it that way. A couple of people did, but for the most part, people were happy to do business over the phone. And that's how I set it up remotely, and then realized at a certain point in time that allowed me to work from anywhere because I was already working from home. But actually, the beginning of the business was, again, because of the pressures that I was under at the time. I was in full-time corporate, which I mentioned, and I'd been there several years, and it was what's traditionally considered quite a good job, I suppose, and I just hated every minute of it, to be honest. Like, I really, really hated it. So I went to one of these seminars. It's probably familiar to some of your audience, at least. This was in 2014, and the seminar was all about how you make money out of property. And I was very inspired. Someone took me along as a guest. Before I went, I actually had a bit of a, like, I don't know if I really want to go to this, and it's probably like a scam or a nonsense kind of negative attitude. But I had a rule at the time. I think at that particular point in time, I was really searching for something else. And I had a rule that if I didn't have a really good reason not to do something, I had to do it. So when my friend said, do you want to come to this seminar? I said, okay, you know, I might learn something. And then I also wasn't completely filled with hope and, you know, inspiration for transformation. But I decided I would at least go and put myself in the room and see what they were talking about. And that particular seminar, there's lots of different ones from lots of similar kind of providers, really. But it completely transformed my life. It started at that point, because during the course of those 3 days, I really saw the opportunity of property, real estate as a business. I got very excited about that. I'd never really seen it from that angle before. I tried to launch a business and it didn't work out, the first one. And I didn't lose money, but I didn't make money. And I poured a lot of time and energy into it. And I ended up with a couple of beliefs. One was that I really loved business and being an entrepreneur and doing business. And the other one was I thought that, unfortunately, I couldn't make any money out of business because I didn't the first time. So when I saw property, I thought, as a business, I was like, no, this works. This should work. And I didn't have a huge amount of capital. So I raised funds from angel investors. So, you know, there are creative ways to do it. It is exhausting. You have to learn more. You have to pour even more time and energy into it. But we did it. And I bought some property projects in Birmingham. I was London based. I bought in Birmingham. And then I set up a couple of HMOs and started running them. But during that part of my life, I suppose, during the time I was doing those projects, there was just so much going on, and I really was spending every spare minute on the business. So what I did was I'd heard great things about Filipino people in terms of they had great work ethic, they were affordable, they spoke good English. And I thought, well, maybe I had to be very careful about finances. I was balancing a lot of things. Like I said, I used other people's money to fund the real estate stuff that I did. And I thought, well, this could be a good option for me. So I ran an advert on a fairly established Filipino job site. And then a few things happened. One was I got absolutely overwhelmed, inundated with applications, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. So I was like, right, there's a lot of people that potentially want to work for me from the Philippines. That's something I never knew before. And then I tried to filter through them. It was hard. I spent some time looking at different CVs. I invited some candidates for interview. I ended up finding somebody I thought would be really good, offered her a position. We started working together, and at that point in time, I would just like to say I made the biggest mistake that people usually make when they do this, which is I hired the wrong person immediately. And I had to stop, let them go, and start again. And it was when I started again that I really started to get into this line of thinking of, there's something here. I know it. I can feel it. There was lots of interest. I know there were some good people in there. How do I get that right next time? Basically found this way to find a fantastic person. They came in. They immediately started making my life much easier. I then got another one because they were just amazing, and I needed to clone myself as fast as possible to, you know, get some sleep. And off the back of that, what happened, because this whole business, the Freedom Geek, was a total accident. I was not even going in this direction. And I did that. And at this time, this was in 2015, people in the UK property world were not really using virtual assistants in 2015. Today is a conversation in that community. Like, have you got one? Who do you use? You should get one. It's very much part of the conversation. Back then it wasn't, not at all. So what happened was I mentioned to a couple of people that I was using virtual assistants from the Philippines, and the reactions were unbelievable. People were like, how'd you get that? How'd you get one of those? And then what do they do? And how much does it cost? And I was like, okay. And it was strange to me, because very quickly that became the only thing that people wanted to talk to me about. So another hot topic in the real estate community, as you know, is raising money. Very hot topic. People want to know how to do it. If you've done it, they ask you loads of questions. people didn't even want to talk to me about that anymore. They're like, that's quite interesting, but I want to know about the virtual assistant thing. And I'm like, people want to talk to me more about virtual assistants than they do about raising money. I was like, that's interesting. And then people asked for help. I started helping people. At first, I just gave them the information and I thought that would be enough. But people said, no, I want you to do it. You've done it and I want you to do it. And I was like, okay. I mean, it wasn't really a formal business at the beginning. It was just people nagging me and stalking me and being weird about it. And then I was like, all right, I'll do it.
Wasn't me, for the record.
It wasn't you on day one, no. There were some pretty established property people, and that was exciting for me because I actually had something interesting that they wanted to talk to me about. Because when you're a newbie on the circuit trying to do these things and establish yourself, you're very much like everyone else. And the people that are further down the line and not that interested in you, they might coach you. But I suddenly was getting conversations with some people that I'd been looking up to and watched as speakers, for at least a year at the time. And I was like, oh, this is great. So I helped people. I said yes. They just brought more people. Other people started calling me and said, you're the person to speak to about this. And I was like, okay, yeah, all right. And I started the business. And then, of course, I had two businesses and a full-time job, which was total insanity. Didn't last too long in that state because it was just too much. And that led to, ultimately quitting my corporate career, really going for it in the virtual assistant business. And it's just, I mean, it doubled every year for the first 3 years and it continues to grow through COVID, and it's phenomenal. So yeah, that's the beginning. Sorry, that was quite a long story, but
no, it's very interesting because I could imagine it doing well during COVID, but we'll talk about that in a minute. I just wanted to go back a bit. Was your background in HR?
No. And I actually think that was an advantage. So I had a mixed background. I mean, even in my career, I'd done a little bit of everything, sales and problem solving and projects and trading. At one point, I did all kinds of things. My last role was a sort of relationship manager because it was a jack of all trades within an organization type role. But what happens with that, and when I started this business, I sort of said to myself, I don't really care how people are doing traditional recruitment. I think a lot of it is hugely flawed. You know, you get sent a pile of CVs, you see who's good at writing them, if they even wrote them themselves, you invite them to interview. It's a huge waste of time. You're not really testing competency up front. All kinds of people are coming through. And in my corporate career, I saw some really bad hires. And I mean, at senior level, you know, someone will go, this is the new head of global, whatever. And you're like, okay, that person's got no people skills, or, you know, you just immediately be like, this is interesting. So I went into it with the attitude of, I've got this problem. I need to solve it. I don't care what anyone else does. I think I've got a great way to do it. I looked at how the investment banks recruited people. They gave me a bit of inspiration that they really put people through the mill with the way that they do it. Lots of filtering and testing, which is a big part of my process. And I just said, I'm going to do it like that because I don't have time to waste. You know, I'm exhausted already. So I want to find someone good. I'm a geek. So I geeked out on designing it, the first version of it. It's been redesigned by some better geeks that work for me since then. I suppose it was very entrepreneurial. I said, I don't care how anyone else does it. It needs to work. I don't want to see the wrong people. We're doing it this way. And it worked, which was fantastic. So yeah, I went from there.
I think what is great about what you've done is you've not only put this really good process and system in place, but you've put these pretty big hurdles in place. So it means it's as difficult as applying for, say, a mortgage for people to get through your filter system.
Yes, absolutely. We take about 8% of the applicants. So we reject over 90% of people through the filtering process. And we just give them a range of different things. So aptitude testing, including logical, verbal and reasoning testing. So logical, numerical, and verbal reasoning. Why? Because I want to work with smart people. I really want to work with people who can grab the ball and run with it. And I do, thankfully. Okay, it's not a perfect science, but those types of tests do draw out people with better English, with better calculation abilities, that type of thing. We do very, very thorough referencing. So we get local police checks from the Philippines. People don't know how to do that. You know, it's actually not very hard. We get government IDs from them. We check their social media because if someone is on social media saying like, I hate my boss and blah, 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 and broadcasting, should we say, quite unprofessional things, I don't want that to happen to a customer of mine. So I'm like, I don't want them to be like, I hate Nicole and start doing that on their social media. Like, that would be terrible. So we really look through their social media, like back quite a while to make sure that's not happening. We look at their LinkedIn profiles. We look at their CVs, of course, but we cross-check their LinkedIn profiles with their CVs. We measure their internet speeds to make sure that their computers are fast. We measure their computer specifications as well for the same reason. We ask them what their backup plan is if their line fails. We do psychometric testing as well. So we do the Tony Robbins DISC test, and we do wealth dynamics profiling. Some entrepreneurs love that, I me included. That's all just about seeing who fits in with you and your personality, your working style, to make sure that you don't, basically to make sure that you get someone or build a team of people around you who complements you. We do lots and lots and lots of that. So on the candidate side, when they want to work for us, they immediately need to go through these different filters, and we put them in a particular order as well, with a view to encouraging candidates to come through. So the aptitude testing doesn't take very long. It's actually quite quick, and it's multiple choice. And then they come through to a test, which is more based on their skill sets, and it depends what role they're going for. So if it's a creative role, we'll do a creative test. If it's a generalist role, we'll test sort of general different mix of skills. And then we get them to submit the requirements, all of their IDs, their references, which we do check, of course, lots of things like that. And it's pretty time consuming. I think most candidates probably take probably between 2 and 4 hours to come through our funnel. They sit down, they can do it all together. And then it just knocks out everyone who's not committed. And one thing that I've seen with this is, of course, skill sets are important, but the attitude of somebody, or we want it to match the entrepreneurial attitude, because anyone who's done anything entrepreneurial realizes you need to be incredibly resourceful. Like, you don't always take no for an answer. You just find a way. You do things that you don't think you're capable of. You have to work out how to do things from a place where you've never been before. You have to do it day in, day out. So I want to find the people that mirror that, that come in with that attitude as well, that can help you. And yes, some of it's going to be, you know, the standard procedures, shall we say. This is how I do things, do it like that. And it's a very safe place to start if you haven't worked with VAs. But you can get to a level, which is what I do quite a lot of, which is, this is what we want to achieve. Let's collaborate. I do lots of brainstorming stuff. I'm a very creative person. So I'm like the equivalent of scribbling stuff all over a napkin and being like, there you go. And they will take it and sort it out and translate it and turn it into a real thing. And so, yes, that just gets rid of a lot of people. We do the interviews. We do initial interviews as well, which is more about getting to know the VAs, who they are, their people skills. You know, it can be quite intense working with someone in a business. As we know, the communication really should be there for this to work out. So you might be speaking to them possibly daily when you first start working together. That might not stay daily, or it might stay daily but reduced to kind of 10-minute check-in rather than, you know, an hour of training, etc. At least once a week it should be. And if you're going to be speaking to somebody every day, and if you're going to enjoy the business you run, and we're not going to make it if we don't enjoy as much of it as possible, then again, it's really important to like that person. So that's part of what we're looking at as well. That's really a bit about the filtering. I don't know of anyone really who there might be one or two that do filtering to this level, like so stringent. And I think it should be standard across the industry. You know, when people come in and apply for a job, like, why don't we do a bit more of a trial-based thing? Here's like a problem that exists in my business. How would you solve it? And give that to three, you know, smart people And someone, even in the assessment stage, might step forward with an incredible solution. I mean, it's still happening to me, as I hire from my own team. People come forward and they're so bright. And I think, oh, we've thought of everything. And they're like, well, have you done this? And I'm like, that's very clever. It happened yesterday, actually, with someone new that I'm trialing from the Philippines for my own team. He had a brilliant idea. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay, we haven't thought of anything. Who knew? I don't know why I thought we had. Because we think about it a lot every day for the last few years. But no, it's very interesting, the landscape for this.
And I will say that your team in the Philippines are incredibly efficient and easy to work with. And my experience has been, and this is why I wanted to talk to you about it today. This is not an advert for you. It is just because I can see the value having used your service now twice and with great success. And I think for me, what was really good is that your team really understood and took the time to understand exactly what it was that I needed and solve for that problem. And that was just brilliant. I don't think that anyone, even in the UK, could have done a better job than that. And that's clearly testament to the skill set of people who are in the Philippines and the way that they are already so used to working with people abroad. It just is something that seems to be very normal for them in their careers. So what do you think has been the key in the growth of your business for you?
Yes. Actually, just to touch upon that previous thing that you were saying about understanding the customer, because it's the first part of what I do when I onboard a new member to our team. I'm training someone up at the moment, and I really teach them about our customer avatar. I get them to create a customer avatar as well. So, and I ask them, what's important to this person? What's stressing them out? How much money do you think they have? How much money do you think they want to spend on this? How do they live their life? What's their situation? What part of the world do they live in? And I really go through that exercise, and that combined with them shadowing some of our consultation calls where they're actual entrepreneurs speaking, watching. We now regularly are producing testimonial interviews of people who work with us who talk about the transformation they've been through. They listen to the podcast that I've done as well. So yes, the people in the Philippines are amazing with the customer service and the politeness and the collaboration with people abroad. That it's been established way before I was involved with it. They were doing a lot of outsourcing to support the US, and it went, I think, relatively well. Our early outsourcing to other countries wasn't seen as a positive thing, but I think the Filipino, their English and their politeness and everything that they've got, it's just been a resounding success with supporting North America in particular, combined with really understanding my customer and their emotions and their needs. And I put a lot of pressure on my team to get that. Because even if you work through the requirements a little bit, just understanding the emotional need, because most of the people who've picked up the phone to me are exhausted. They're stressed out. They didn't think, oh, it'll be nice to have a virtual assistant. They're like, I am tired. And that's generally like what's happening to them when they start to call us. I just wanted to mention that, because I think that tuning into your customer in that way, and I am my own customer, I get that. And so I think my team work closely with me and they understand it too. It's been a part of that conversation, which has made it, I think, usually really great when people speak to us. Like, they feel that and they're like, oh, I thought I was just ringing up to talk about admin, but you seem to actually understand who I am and what I want. So this is different. Yes. And then success of the business, I think it's been a couple of things. I happen to very successfully niche myself into something at the right time, by accident, which was starting with the right audience. They had, I work with a lot of different people, which was touched upon in the introduction. It started with the UK property investing community. They looked after me. They kept coming to me. They continue to do so. But everybody talks to everybody else. Everyone's in forums, UK property investors might own a couple of other businesses when they're more sophisticated or not necessarily. They might own the other businesses first and then come into investment. So, it all crosses over, and people just started calling us from the USA, from Canada, from Australia, because they knew someone in the UK or wherever it was who'd helped them, and they wanted to know if it translates to their business. And the answer is generally yes, because very similar problems, not enough hours in the day, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe very concerned about finances. Maybe not. We've had a big mix around that as well. Maybe just think it's better business to do it this way, you know, however you're looking at it. So I think I came in at the right time. Like I said, it was an accident. When this first started, when people first started asking me, I had a bit of an internal battle because I was like, I had a little bit of ego as well. It was like, you know, I've gone this corporate finance career. I'm not going to start again. You know, like, I don't want to go backwards 10 years. I don't want to do that. I was quite proud of like potentially being a property investor. And I wasn't sure how I felt about being what I initially labeled as a recruiter. I was like, have I come all this way to be a recruiter? Because I find that weird. And I nearly stopped, actually. I nearly started saying no to people. And then a friend of mine, another entrepreneur, I think he had a vision around it. He said, don't you dare, basically. He was like, you absolutely have to do this. He's like, people need it. You're good at it. You have to do it. And it was a moment where I thought, I feel like this is some message. I mean, obviously very clearly from him, but just like one of those sort of energetic, the universe, it's not something I would talk about all the time, but there are moments in my life where I'm like, this is supposed to be happening, or you are supposed to understand this. And that was one of those moments. So I was like, right, I'll continue with it. I was very tired when I was thinking like that as well. Like I said, I was working a job and this was another business that had to come. And people just kept coming. And although I had a bit of that attitude, I'll talk about it now. I didn't talk about it at the time when I was helping people. I did want to help people. I was excited about people coming to me. I just wasn't completely sold on this direction for a little while. And that's one of the things. I thought, I'm not going to promote it. I'm going to do it. And I'm only going to do it when I'm asked for it. And even with that attitude, we doubled and doubled. And, you know, for the first couple of years, it's not sustainable to keep doing that. But we are growing. And it started from nothing. It was just a trickle. If someone asked me, I would do it. And it started because there was massive demand. And this is 2015. Now there's more demand than ever. The whole world is shifting. We're seeing it. We're in this pandemic. Everyone's working from home. Previous people who were like, my business doesn't work from home, have changed their tune because it was like, it was get online or die. This was no, you know, as a business. And that has changed the scope. So now people are much more open to collaboration, talking to their customers online. People pivoted. People like me, thankfully, I honestly was just lucky, was already there. I could easily have not done the things at the time that I did them and not be running a business that was already online. But it just so happened that I was. A lot of, again, the property investment community who have been bread and butter of my customers, although it is diverse, they, you know, during the pandemic, when they were forced to stay at home, people called me. I want a VA. I'm going to train them. I'm going to get ready to go. People were waiting for interesting things to happen in the market. And so that's what they did. They got their VAs in. They trained them. We were ridiculously busy. And then, as you know, there's been huge movement in the UK with, you know, property market. That's happening. And my services have supported that for some people. So it became successful partly through great timing. I'm sure this will continue to grow. Outsourcing to the Philippines is just becoming more and more and more normal. More and more people are springing up in competition against me. I see it everywhere. And, you know, also people are becoming, I did this just an extra point, something I'm excited about, but this idea of work from home, I mean, we're never going to go back to the way it was before. So more people are going to start living their life in the way that I do, which is moving around, which we haven't talked about too much. But like me being right now in Mexico, being able to run my business from anywhere, more people are going to be in that position. And they're going to be using cross-border outsourcing solutions because it's going to make sense to them on many levels, including, you know, collaborating globally will just become more normal than it's ever been kind of level. So yes, the business was the right thing at the right time with the right customers. And the right future. And I'd love to say that I was intelligent enough to foresee all that, but I have no idea.
It was really, yeah, it was opportune. And also your system is phenomenal. There's another word that I'd like to put out there, and that is trust. And I think that a lot of your business is trust. And when you are outsourcing, And you think, just a minute, I could be giving over all my financial information to someone, and I need to have complete trust in them that they are vetted and all of these things. And I had one instance where I interviewed someone who came through you, and then he just disappeared, and your team were excellent and just said, oh, look, we're really sorry, he's not the right candidate anyway. And then he contacted me on LinkedIn and said, hey, how about we do a deal and you come and work with me directly? And I immediately just went, there is no way, if he's been rejected by you, there is no way that I would want to work with someone like that. And so for me, there's a huge amount of trust in the people that I've now hired to know that it really is, it's the best. And I think there's a really good advert in Australia. It's a John West tuna advert, and it's the tuna that John West rejects that make John West the best. And I think that's a great tagline for you as well. It really is that who you reject. But you've got these other really great systems in place as well. There's various systems that you use for tracking time, and you've got great suggestions on how to pay people without commission. But also the other thing that you handed over to me when we first started working together is this handout of, I think it's 100 ways to work with a VA. And this is something that's quite, I think, valuable that you've built up over all these years of building this company. So how did that come about?
Yes, thank you. It's a good question. and just quickly on the trust thing, because it's massive, it's huge. It's what stops people, not just from the Philippines, but it's what stops people giving anyone, anywhere, any part of responsibility for their business. Because we're like, this is my business baby. I poured like my life and heart and soul into it. I cannot hand it over. Or sometimes we're like, it's only me. I'm the only person who has to do everything. And once you do start handing over to people who are good, that instinct, first of all, calms down. And then for someone like me, it's like, I'm never doing it again. Like, what was I thinking? And I try and get like the whole queen of delegation. I try and push myself further and further and further. What else? People are outsourcing all kinds of crazy things off the back of this. I know one of the investors that I know, he's outsourced, his VA organizes for someone to come to his house, pick up his laundry, go and get it done, return it to him, like all kinds of things are happening, which is just brilliant. But it is a big fear for people, and it's why we filter, and it's why we talk to people about our filters. And so we put them through so many. And even at the end, by the way, it's not going to be perfect. I mean, my perfect scenario is to always put perfect people in front of you. But guess what? People are people. And that means we're in the Wild West. So we do what we can do. That's all the filtering. And then it comes to what we've done very successfully, is block out a lot of time wasters, is block out a lot of people who aren't serious, maybe just aren't very switched on, who just don't really mean it. We've got rid of a lot of them, but there still may be some who've slipped through. And, you know, it's why we very closely handhold people through the first parts of it and look out for those signs, because that behavior is untrustworthy. You know, it is fundamentally, and you saw that and you were like, absolutely not, which I think is the right thing to do. And that's what we're looking out for as well in those early days with behavior. And then, so how did I come up with 100? So, okay, I'm like a... my brain is a wonderful, weird place to live in. And I mentioned that I'm a creative. That means that my happy place, probably for an hour or two a day, is like lock me in a room where the walls are whiteboard so I can draw all over everything in colors. And like anyone who is very creative will understand that. I don't have a problem of not having ideas. I have a problem of too many ideas and how I select my ideas and how I actually execute them, which is what my team are basically there to do. People in the early days when they started coming to me had two questions, really. They had more than two questions, but there were always these two questions. And the one question was, how do I get one? And that was about the trust and how do I get a good one? I'll rephrase that. That was about the trust and the fear. And is this okay? Like, you're doing it. Can you tell me, like, how is this working out for you? Because I know I have a problem. I'm not sure if you're the solution. So it was kind of like, convince me that this is okay. And that's where the filtering conversation came in. And the second question was always, what do they do? And you know, it was varied. It was brilliant. I've had a couple of times people would call me, and I don't do the calls anymore, I've outsourced it. But people would call me and say, I need a VA, I need one now. And I was like, okay. And they go, what do they do? I'm like, how do you know you need one when you have no idea what they're doing? Like, I do get it. Like, you're too busy, but it's funny. But for me, I just never struggled with the ideas. So I was like, people really struggle with this. And by the time people were bringing it up, sometimes I'd already talked to them about question one around the trust and the filtering and how to find good people for 15, 20 minutes at least, or longer. And so I was like, this is another quite big question. So I locked myself away in that little padded room that I go into sometimes. And I said, I'm going to give people 100 ideas of what they could do. Because this isn't really a thing. Like, there were just, this is a whole business. You right now, if you are the only person, you are marketing, you are finance, you are customer services, you are tech, you are sales, you are strategy, you are your own secretary because you don't have one, you are research, you are networking. I'm just throwing this out. No wonder people are exhausted. You're a whole company, and you know it's completely unrealistic as you start to grow. So I took all of those different sections and I was like, well, you know, as I am sales, what do I do within sales? And I listed out what could be done in sales, and I listed out loads of things. So I did the same for marketing, I did the same for financials, I did the same for personal errands, kind of secretarial stuff, if you like, that role that people think virtual assistants are admin people, and that's one of the things they're trying to clarify with me. Is this an admin person that I need? And I'm like, well, what do you do all day? What you know, if you wake up in the morning, what are you doing until you go to bed, possibly quite late at night, 10 hours? And you mentioned measuring time, and it's great for VAs. It's also great for yourself, because if you don't know what you're doing all day, if you know I've had a busy day, it was a blur, and I've got another one tomorrow, but I can't think beyond that. It's your first problem. You need to you need to sit down and measure yourself, perhaps using those kind of tools, and say, what do I do? Oh, well, I spend 5 hours in meetings and then I wonder why I feel like I'm not moving forwards because I don't have the headspace or the energy or the time to do this other stuff, which is really important. So what are you doing in the meetings? You know, what admin are you doing? If you're doing lots of data entry and administration stuff as the owner of your business and it doesn't drive the business forward, no wonder you're in pain. You know, as soon as you identify that and you know how the value of time for entrepreneurs is the most important thing. That's why people in the early days were more interested in talking to me about what effectively is a time solution as opposed to a money solution. Because if I do something and you get 1 hour back of your day, just 1 hour, you think I'm amazing because time is so precious. If I do something and you get 5 hours back, I mean, you'll refill it immediately because we can't help ourselves. That's where the Queen of Delegation challenge comes in. As it gets more sophisticated, how do I move it off me? But yeah, it's just, that's how I came up with it. People always want it. They bite my arm off for it. We mention it as a little hook. If people want it, then please reach out to me. I know you put all the details there. You can instant message me, etc. And just say 100 and we'll send you a copy of 100 ideas. And people can just sit down and highlight and think, yes, I do that. And yes, I do that. And yes, I do that. And they'll probably highlight half the document and realize why they have a problem.
No, exactly. It was really useful for me to do. And when I hired Kim, I actually gave her the title of marketing executive or marketing consultant. I can't remember now, because I wanted her to feel like a really genuine part of the team and also to recognize that what she's doing is more than admin. She really is my right hand as far as marketing, and she fully takes control of that, so much so that we're now building a team underneath her to assist her. So I've got this whole team now based in the Philippines. Well, Kim doesn't know this, but we're about to start contacting you to get someone else. But we are building this whole team. So I think that it's wrong to think that it's just for admin as well. There, as you've said in your 100 things, there are so many things that people are very skilled at doing, and their qualifications, their attitude and everything is just, it is really a wonder to work with. And I'm really pleased with mine. I'm evangelical. And interestingly, I was on Clubhouse the other day on a a room there with property women, and they were all talking about their VAs, and everyone was like, oh, you must have a VA. So I'm sure many of them are clients of yours. It just seems that so many people are warming to that idea. I want to move back to your property journey too, if we may, and just talk about how I can understand how you set out to become this property investor, and your path was changed for you quite rapidly due to this business idea that just took off. But what is it that you do in property now?
Yes, it's been really interesting. So did a couple of HMO projects in Birmingham, and then everything started to shift around. So Birmingham, this is pre-COVID, probably within a couple of years of me doing that, became extremely saturated with HMOs, extremely saturated. So the things that were working on day one weren't really working, struggling more to get tenants. I mean, it was okay. The particular area of Birmingham that I picked had a little boom, which was nice. So, because that's a great thing about property, right? You can make money through rental, and if you own it, you make money from the property going up in value. And that happened, thankfully. The rental side was a bit tougher. So what happened with me personally, it was, I started this whole journey first in property, and then virtual assistants were not very far behind, to be honest. I learned about property in 2014. I took action to really do it in terms of raising money and then buying properties in 2015. Virtual assistants also started in 2015. And then come 2018, I reached a point with my the right way to do this, as we know, you might have done it this way, I'm not sure, is to say, I'm going to reach this perfect financial freedom figure. You know, you've got this figure, I can live on this. And when I get to this figure, I'm going to stop doing property and I'll have enough passive income to be fine and to enjoy my life a bit more. And depending on a lot of factors, depends on how quickly you can do that. And property was the thing that made me believe it was even possible, because you have to go through a big shift on what you believe about money and probably what you're worth, and change everything you've ever known about being an employee to changing to really being an entrepreneur and believing in yourself and believing that it could be done. And I saw people do it. I saw people make money, quit their jobs. I saw it. So I was like, this is real. This can be done. But in 2018, I reached an emotional point where I was like, I do not want to go to work anymore, my corporate career, because I feel that I just can't go on. I just hit a wall. I was like, I don't want to be doing this. I love the business stuff. It was very draining because I was doing so much at the same time. So I sold off part of my portfolio. I decided to focus my energies into the Freedom Geek. I left the UK. It was a really big, let's tear everything up and start again moment for me. And I started traveling around the world, and I knew that I would be okay for a little while. But during the first 6 months, the Freedom Geek had to grow enough for me to be able to continue. Because in the early days, like it paid for itself. It paid for itself and a little bit more, but it didn't really pay enough for itself, more me to live in a comfortable way, like all these different things. So it was kind of a knife edge, and I just went for it. If anyone wants to follow that kind of journey, I would recommend that they don't go quite as kamikaze as I did, because the level of stress that came with it. I mean, I did it. It wasn't comfortable, but I did it. And so I made a decision to put property on hold, to sell off an investment that I'd worked really hard for, and that was going to be part of my pension and everything. Like, it was a huge decision moment, but it came down to me sitting down with myself one day and saying, had enough, I want to quit my job, I want to focus on the virtual assistant business. At that point in time, I could just see the potential. It was just going so, you know, it was growing so fast. And we were helping people, and that's what really shifted the transformation stories. People saying thank you, not just the entrepreneurs, people in the Philippines were messaging me saying thank you. And I was like, you know what, I'd love to say that I was, you know, such an amazing altruistic person that I went and to help you, but I didn't. That was never my intention. It's just a wonderful benefit that's come from it, that Filipinos have got some really interesting work from home career opportunities to support entrepreneurs. Basically the crux of it is property's on hold. I still own some. I still deal with the community all the time. I still watch what's going on. I've got some incredible influencers that I know who are open to talking to me, which, as you all know, means that I've got a very powerful network that I can tap into very respectfully, because that's the way to do it if I ever need to. And I think in the future, my goal is once the world heals itself, once I make a couple more decisions about the pace of my life, because the first year I moved country every month, as well as growing a business. And I would really recommend that people don't do those two things at the same time. And I was exhausted when I got to Mexico, and I loved it here. So I decided to kind of recalibrate here a little bit. It's been an amazing place for that. But property is kind of on hold. I will do it again. I think for me going forward now, it will always be a slow grow. I'll aim to do maybe sort of one deal a year and just gradually build it up. And I don't really want to do that, run at it like a monster thing that people do and they transform their lives in a year. It's incredible. I've got a lot of respect for it. But what I've realized is, although I'm very grateful for everything I've learned, everyone I've worked with and where I am today, my heart wasn't really in the property investment side of things. It wasn't really. It was, you can certainly make money. There are many different strategies, and arguably I didn't find exactly the right one for me. I don't know. That's something for me to explore a bit more in the slow burner approach in the future. But the way that I live now, I'm really in love with my lifestyle, and the Freedom Geek has allowed that. And maybe property would be more of a kind of Airbnb type strategy. I need to look at the state of the world, just because, I mean, I live in Airbnbs right now. I'm constantly moving around and exploring them, and I'm watching like how they're set up and everything about them. I do find it really interesting. So it's still on my mind. But I've kind of paused. I was doing the HMO things. I got buy to let as well in London. And I deal with one thing that is really interesting. Sorry, the additional point on this is that because I speak to so many property investors, I generally know what's going on. Because all of the ones starting out ring me and tell me what they're doing as part of their, I need a VA. And I'm like, that's really interesting. Everybody's doing this right now. And that will, you know, I can track that and it will continue, which is, it's a nice, nice extra piece of information to know.
Yeah, you have built up a fantastic business, and I'm quite in awe actually of the lifestyle that's given you, and that you've found such a wonderful niche to go into. So, Imogen, thank you so much for sharing your story with me. I've wanted to share this for a long time, so thank you for taking the time out. And we'll make sure that we do put up all that information in the show notes as well, so people can get that 100 tasks for a VA as well from you. So, Imogen, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please support us with a like, comment, subscribe and share. And you can always join the conversation live across my YouTube, Facebook and LinkedIn pages at 1 p.m. every Thursday. See you there soon.